Hello and welcome to Right Through Now, the podcast that helps you stay connected with world news, international events, science and technology, that sort of fun stuff. All right, let's begin today's episode. So, you know, one of the things about renewable energy is that sources of renewable energy aren't available continuously most of the times. So, for instance, take, let's say, wind power. There are gaps in between the consistency of, you know, wind. How fast is wind flowing might vary on a minute-by-minute basis even. And then solar electricity, I mean, it's just totally not available during nighttime. Unless you're, of course, you're in some region of the world that receives 24-hour sunshine. But then that again, what do you do in winter or summer, conversely? So these sort of problems exist. And there are solutions to at least the for most parts of the world where, you know, the gaps are relatively intermittent. Some solutions, I mean, ideally you would just build a super large battery, right? Now, that's, in some ways, that is exactly what Electric Mountain is in Wales. So what this is basically a power station, and it has two lakes at different levels. And when you have excess electricity, you know, it pumps water up to a mountain and up through the steep, you know, ascent, and takes it to the higher point on the mountain, the higher lake. And when the energy is, when, you know, there are gaps in other sources of energy, or when you need to, you know, come up with some more energy, you just let the water fall back down through the hydroelectric power station, and essentially you generate electricity. So in that way, it's like a massive battery. And you need solutions like that, creative solutions like that, to be able to allow renewable energy to be like the full-time thing. And of course, it's always good to have fail-safes, but I think that's what they should be, rather than, you know, the main source of electricity being coal-fired plants in 2021. That sounds like a nightmare. So, you know, with stuff like that, it's really interesting to, you know, that's the background. And now let's take a look at one of the articles that I'm going to read. So Tesla is building a 100 megawatt energy storage project in Texas. Well, under the radar, Tesla is building an energy storage project in Texas, according to Bloomberg, in Angleton, a town of nearly 20,000 located 40 miles south of Houston, Texas. Tesla subsidiary Gambit Energy Storage is installing the company's modular megapacks. When complete, the 100 megawatt installation will be able to power approximately 20,000 homes. The Electric Reliability Council of Texas told Bloomberg the site could begin operating as soon as the start of June. It's unclear why Tesla is using a subsidiary as the public face of this project. It's not the first of its kind undertaking for the company. In 2017, it built a 100 megawatt-hour battery farm in South Australia. At the moment, it's also supplying California's Pacific Gas and Electric with megapacks for its in-progress Bay Area Moss Landing project. But there's no mistaking the timing of the project. Last month, unprecedented winter left much of Texas without electricity. You know, if you're a long-time listener of this podcast, which started last week, then you will know that I often bring a lot of Elon Musk news into the game. But I have to tell you, that's not something that I've planned. It just so happens that, you know, innovations from Tesla and SpaceX and stuff like that, they come often enough that they make it almost daily. On that front, SpaceX moves to beam Starlink internet into trucks, boats, and aircraft. It's the future, ladies and gentlemen. So there have been instances where stuff like aircraft have had internet. I was fortunate enough to use it a couple of years ago. I don't remember which airline it was, but I think it was one of those double-decker A380s. I could be wrong. But, you know, there's internet on planes, and we know it. But the kind of internet that's available on planes is often not satisfactory, or often it's not the same kind of internet that you enjoy at home, for instance. But let's see. So a train of Starlink satellites in low Earth orbit passes over Uruguay. There's an image in the article. And it just basically looks like Santa's reindeer, essentially. And I have conflicted opinions about that, but I'll bring that up some other time. SpaceX is asking the FCC for approval to beam Starlink internet into moving vehicles. It's seeking regulatory approval to connect its rapidly growing network of internet beaming Starlink satellites to cars, trucks, shipping boats, and aircraft. The request, filed last Friday with the Federal Communications Commission, marks SpaceX's biggest step yet towards connecting Starlink to the automotive sector, a potentially lucrative line of business that would expand the company's current stationery offerings from rural homes. That, of course, I think is the most interesting aspect of this entire scenario. I mean, I'm generally against polluting the night sky, but it's really, really cool that you're able to get high-speed internet in rural places where you've never had internet. I mean, imagine there are so many parts of the world right now where people have never had access to the internet. I'm not sure if their lives are better or worse. I think at least in the very beginning, when you have internet for the first time, the options and avenues that it opens, they're just pure beautiful. I mean, I remember the time that I first got access to the internet. It was, I think, 2002 or something. And I was one of the first, I would say, let's say 500 people to get internet access in my city. And it was just a beautiful world. But, you know, the internet was a different thing back then. All right, let's see. Another article on Porsche. Porsche now owns almost a quarter of electric vehicle car maker Rimac. If you aren't familiar with Rimac, it's basically one of the electric supercar manufacturers that also Richard Hammond crashed one of the Rimacs. I think that's when most people found out that the company exists. But it is a super cool company, I would say. So Porsche has invested an additional 70 million euros in Rimac, boosting its stake in the hypercar manufacturer and EV component supplier from 15 to 24%, Rimac has announced. Porsche joins Hyundai as a major investor in Rimac after the Korean automaker recently put in 80 million euros. Why all the interest in Rimac, ostensibly a niche manufacturer for luxury electric supercars? As Porsche notes, the Croatian company is also a major manufacturer of high-performance EV parts, including batteries and drivetrains. That's the future of this entire way of life that you can call the electric automotive industry, just batteries and parts. I really think this is a fascinating avenue where cars are taking, you know, this direction. I was having this discussion every day because I work with petrol heads and all my friends are petrol heads and I'm one. And I'm one of the only ones rooting for electric vehicles because, I don't know, maybe it's just the first time I experienced the thrust of a Tesla. A friend of mine owns one, and you know, when you just gun it, it just shoves you, it like hits you like a ham on the back of your head, and it's a roller coaster, trust me. And you know, stuff like, you know, Porsche electric cars and Rimac, I have no idea how hard the kick at the back of your head is when you're driving one of those cars, because Teslas are pretty nutty when it comes to this stuff. So it is definitely, I mean, when supercar manufacturers do something, that's a trend that will show up in regular cars 10, 15 years down the line. In this case, it might have been vice versa. I think the supercar world is a little bit late, to be honest. But that tells you the technologies that are going to trickle down to regular cars a decade from now. Normal cars for people. Right, let's see. So new 3D printing technique could make lab-grown organs more practical. Folks, this is something that is just on the horizon since a couple of years, and a lot of companies are already, you know, making big advancements in this sector, which is just great. A couple of days ago, we also covered a news article where lab-grown wood would be used to make furniture and stuff like that. So this is a really cool avenue of science. Let's take a read. As much as 3D printed organs have advanced, creating them is still a slow process that can damage the tissue. There may soon be a quicker and more effective method, however. Researchers from the University at Buffalo and elsewhere have developed a 3D printing technique that is 10 to 50 times faster than standard methods. A tiny synthetic hand that would have taken 6 hours to print took just 19 minutes, enough to minimize the deformation and cellular damage from earlier systems. The new approach uses a combination of stereolithography with hydrogels. By precisely guiding photopolymerization, which is curing the material through light, the team could quickly and continuously supply the necessary hydrogel solution and maintain non-stop growth, so to speak. It's akin to paving a new road mere moments before you drive on it. That is just super, super cool. I mean, think of the implications that stuff like this is going to have in the future. I think 50 years from now, organ failure is going to be a completely different thing than what it is today, because I think the technologies will be so far advanced. This is, I'm no crystal ball prediction machine, but I think this is definitely something that is going to influence humanity a lot more than we give it credit for currently. Right, let's see. Gatorade has made a sweat patch to track your perspiration. Thanks, I guess. Okay, you sweat, I sweat, everybody sweats, reads the article. But everyone perspires differently. Whether it's the amount you produce or what comes out of your glands. I'm not sure I want to continue reading this article, but I'm going to try. The composition of your sweat can tell you a lot about what your body needs to recover after a workout. That's the idea behind Gatorade's new GX sweat patch anyway. The patch comes in packs of two for $25, and you can scan them for results using an iPhone app. The article says, sorry, Android users. Okay, whatever. All right, Hummer's electric SUV will be revealed on April 3rd. I promise you, I'm not deliberately trying to curate these news sources. It just happens. General Motors will reveal an SUV version of its all-electric Hummer EV on April 3rd, the company has announced. The automaker unveiled the pickup truck version with 350 miles of range and a host of high-tech features last October. GM, which is producing the electric Hummers under its GMC brand, wouldn't say when the SUV is expected to go into production. The electric pickup truck will start assembly at the end of this year, with the highest spec trim level available to customers first. GMC also showed off its pre-production Hummer EV, handling some snowy conditions in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. The company is highlighting the EV's off-roading capabilities as a way to align with the all-important truck market, which has largely been walled off from the electrification trend until now. Now, on this note, I am really looking forward to seeing Cybertrucks on the road. I mean, it has massive implications into, you know, it's not a particularly good-looking truck, I would say, and I kind of see that perspective. Hummer's electric SUV, on the other hand, it still has those big Hummer lines. It has that massive appeal and, you know, presence like a Hummer normally does, but it's electric. So I'm not sure the type of person that the electric Hummer, you know, kind of attracts to itself, because the Hummer has always been extremely low gas mileage, massive road presence. And at least in Europe, that type of thing is just ostentatious and ridiculous. But, you know, it's still a beautiful thing. I still think Hummers have a place in the world, and electric Hummers, I just don't get it personally. But yeah, if I like the Cybertruck, you know, logic dictates I should also like the Hummer electric SUV. So my brain is conflicted. All right, let's see. NVIDIA and Harvard researchers are using AI to make genome analysis faster and cheaper. Scientists from NVIDIA and Harvard have made a huge breakthrough in genetic research. Now, this is something that I think more people should know about, that, you know, gaming cards and people, you know, who manufacture gaming cards have a lot to do with developments in AI, because the type of computer that a GPU is, you know, it allows you to calculate operations that are specifically required by AI. That's really fascinating. I don't know enough about the topic to be able to, you know, talk about this for hours, but I really want to learn about this topic. So expect more of this stuff in the future. ATAC works with ATAC SEQ, a well-established method designed to find open areas in the genome of healthy and diseased cells. These, quote, open areas, end quote, are subsections of a person's DNA that are used to determine and activate specific functions, think liver, blood, or skin cells. This is the part of a person's genome that could give scientists indications on whether a person could have Alzheimer's, heart disease, or cancer. The ability to analyze the genome faster and cheaper will go a long way in identifying the specific mutations or biomarkers that could lead to certain diseases. It could even help drug discovery by helping researchers figure out how a specific disease works. Super cool. All right, here's something interesting. Hummingbirds' iridescent feathers are still a bit of a mystery. Scientists still don't know the full purpose of this changeable biological trait. I'm going to read this article because I'm generally super interested in, like, you know, animals and birds and stuff like that. I think we don't give them enough attention. But I, you know, again, hats off to people who do. What looks like an elaborate sequined mask on this male hummingbird could disappear the second he tilts his head. There's a photograph of a hummingbird, a male Anna's hummingbird. The throat and face feathers are iridescent. Depending upon the viewing angle, the plumage might flash brilliant or mundane hues. In this species called Anna's hummingbird, only males have an iridescent face and neck. The male Anna's hummingbird courts mates by sitting absolutely still and singing his heart out to a potential companion. By freezing in place, he guarantees she sees his magenta face coloring. Researchers are still investigating the purpose of the kaleidoscopic coloring. Iridescence appears in birds, beetles, spiders, and more. Some biologists think that glittering might bolster an animal's attempt at getting noticed by potential mates, for example. I think that's what it is. It's like 80s hair metal. Right, let's see. So, okay, comets may have seeded Earth with life-supporting carbon. You know, the origins of human life and the origins of life in general on our planet is something that is just a totally fascinating avenue. And any kind of big news development that comes about this stuff is just so cool. This isn't relatively new. This is something that has been, you know, in the discussion in the scientific workplace, I guess, since a couple of decades now. But let's take a look. NASA's Airborne Telescope has made yet another major discovery just months after it confirmed the presence of water on the moon's sunlit surfaces. SOFIA's latest find relates to the essence left by an icy comet that zipped past Earth in 2016 from its origins on the outskirts of our solar systems. Using one of its infrared instruments, the telescope was able to detect carbon, a key ingredient of life, in the dusty glow of comet Catalina's tail. The celestial visitor, which was briefly visible to stargazers before it slingshot past the sun and out of view, is now helping scientists to unlock the mysteries of our own origins. NASA says comets like it could have delivered carbon to planets during the early formation of our solar system, when the Earth may have struggled to capture enough of the life-giving element on its own due to carbon-depleting effects of primordial heat. By comparison, cooler gas giants like Jupiter and Neptune may have been able to support carbon in the outer solar system. What's more, Jupiter's jumbo size may have acted as a gravitational barrier, preventing carbon from mixing back in the inner solar system, where terrestrial planets like Earth are located, according to the space agency. Super duper cool news. Alright, let's see. Prehistoric plankton became predators to survive a mass extinction. An asteroid strike 66 million years ago not only devastated the dinosaurs, but almost reset life in the oceans back to a primitive soup of simple microorganisms. What prevented ocean ecosystems from totally collapsing, scientists hypothesize, may have been shell-covered algae that could feed on other organisms, but maintained the ability to photosynthesize. This kill would preserve the foundation of the marine realm's complex food webs through a long, dark spell. All right, well, that about wraps it up for today's episode, and see you tomorrow. Ciao.